Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Tes Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Tes Vov. We continue with halachas, with laws regarding meal offerings. Korach HaKometz Shirei HaNecholin. Once the handful that's taken from the bowl containing the meal offering is put onto the fire, then the balance, the rest of the mincha shirel, that which remains after you remove the handful, necholim, are that is eaten, it's baked, it's prepared by the kohanim for their own personal benefit. Minolon, what's the source for this, the order? Namely, first you have to order, you have to offer into the fire the handful of flour from the meal offering, and then they can eat from it. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "V'hiktir hakohen es azkorasa." The kohen offers that which is to be put into the fire. Uksiv anoiseris min hamincha l'Aaron ulevonov, and that which remains afterwards is for Aaron, who was the first kohen, and his sons, his descendants. Korach hakometz. When we speak about the kometz being offered, being exposed to the fire, which then enables the balance, that which remains in the bowl from which the handful was taken, to be eaten by the kohanim, lemor kidislei ulemor kidislei. There are two opinions, each one according to his own approach with regard to how much fire or exposure to fire must take place regarding the handful that was put into it before the balance can be eaten. Or let us say, in other words, no one says that the eating of the balance, the shirayim, the balance of the mincha, of the meal offering, can take place only once the entire handful has been consumed and turned into ash. No one says that. However, there are two opinions as to how much burning must take place before the balance can be eaten. Let's continue in the Gemara. The itmar hakometz meimosay matishram b'achilo, the kometz, the handful, once it's been put into the fire, how much burning must take place before the shirayim can be eaten? Rabbi Chanina Omar, mishetishlot bohur. The word tishlot bohur, without translating it, literally means where the fire takes hold a bit. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Mishetitzas Ha'ur Berubo. Only at a point that the majority of the handful of flour has been taken hold of by the fire. So that Rabbi Yochanan requires a greater fire consumption of the handful before the balance, the shirayim, can be eaten by the kohen. So they kind of have to wait a little bit longer than they would according to Rabbi Chanina. We continue with a quote from the long Tanaic source on Yud Dalid Amud Beis, the source that's been preoccupying us since then. It says, "V'rashem kohanim liten l'soicha yayin v'shemen uvash." The kohanim, with regard to the shirayim that they are given for their personal consumption, are entitled to mix into the meal offering the flour. They can mix into it wine, oil, and honey. My taima, why do they have this right? Why do they have such, a range, so many options available to them? Omar Kroh, the pasuk says, and Rashi quotes the phrase "L'chon esatim l'moshcha," and here the Gemara quotes just one word "L'moshcha," and the explanation of that word "L'moshcha" means "L'gedula." for greatness, for benefit. Kederech shamlochim oichlim. We say for greatness as kings would eat, meaning there's a sense of royalty involved with eating the meal offering. And just like a king isn't limited in how he prepares or how his food is prepared, so to the Kohanim have a full range of options. However, v'ein asurim elo milachametz, the Brisa said on Yudalmid Beis that there is one restriction, and that is they cannot leave it to become leavened. It cannot be left to ferment. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, lo se'ofeh chometz chelkom. Omar Reb Shimon ben Lakish, and in looking at this pasuk, Reb Shimon Lakish says, "Afilu chelkom, even their own portion, meaning the shirayim, lo se'ofe chametz, cannot be baked in a leavened fashion. So rather, they have to be careful not to allow it to sit. Kohanim year round, with regard to their menachas, are like the general population with regard to matzis when it comes to Pesach." Our Mishnah on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph said, "Kol haMenachas," and the Mishnah pointed out all Menachas need oil and Lavona. Lavona is a spice, a granular spice that's added to the Menachas. And it said, with the exception of the Minchas Sota, the Sota meal offering does not have Shemen nor Lavona. Well, this gives rise to a question. It takes four lines to develop this question. The Mishnah, having stated a rather broad-ranging, inclusive rule that all menachas have shemen and lavona, is that really so? We're going to bring that into question. V'chol ha-menachas tuna shemen and lavona. V'oika minchas chote, is there not the meal offering brought by the sinner? The Rachmona Omar, regarding that particular sacrifice called the minchas chote, it says, lo yosim olel shemen v'lo yitain olel lavona. Oil is not added, nor is the Lavona spice added. So we have to then resolve what our Mishnah claims with the reality of Menachas. So the Gemara responds, Hochi Ko'omar. Here's a restatement of the Mishnah. You'll notice we've broken down this source into four sections. Roman numeral 1, Roman numeral 2, 3, and 4. The opening of the source deals with Menachas in general, and the fourth part of this source, the fourth section, deals with the Sota. So you'll see that we'll be going from one extreme to the other. In the middle, there's reference made to the Minchas Chote, number 2, and the Minchas Omer, number 3. So, and you'll see that in decreasing order, how many characteristics there are regarding Menachas in general, four, say, prominent characteristics, and regarding those four characteristics, we're going to be reducing one by one until we get to the Minchas Sota, where none of the original characteristics, which are common to all Menachas, will be found by the Minchas Sota. And that was the spirit of our Mishnah, presenting all Menachas with their four characteristics, and the Minchas Sota having none of those original characteristics. Now let's see the source and present it in practical terms. Kol haMenachas tunos shemen ulavona. Notice we've numbered subcategory 1, shemen, 2, lavona, ubos min achitim, and they come from its wheat flour, and ubos solos. Solos is a refined, well-sifted flour without debris in it. The next category, Minchas Chote, the sin offering, the meal sin offering, Af Alpi She'eino Tu'una Shemen Ulavona, even though characteristics 1 and 2 are not relevant, they don't have oil, they don't have Lavona, Bo Min Hachitim Ubo Solis. Two of the four original Menachas characteristics are still present. They come from wheat, and they come from a finely sifted wheat. Minchas Ha'omer, Af Al Pi Shibo Minchas Seorim, the Minchas Omer, this is a meal offering, it's a barley meal offering, it's making it rather unique, is offered on the 16th of Nisan. And that meal offering is called the Minchas HaOmer, even though it comes from barley, Tu'una shemen ulavona uba geris. It requires oil and lavona. Now, geris is a quality of flour with regard to sorim, which is parallel to soles when it comes to chitim. So the Minchas Omer, with the exception of the fact that it comes from sorim, barley, it seems to have all the characteristics of menachas in general. And number four, vizu, the soita einotuna, lo shemen velo lavona, uba min asorim, uba kemach. No oil, no lavona. It is barley, making it unique, meaning unlike the general realm of menachas. And it comes kemach. Kemach is flour as soon as the original barley grains were ground, creating flour, but not sifted, as Rashi on the Mishnah explains. So you can see that the Mincha Sota has none of the characteristics of the original Korban Mincha. Means Menachos in general. Now, we continue with a Tanaic source, and we have some markings in the source on the side. Under the Mivneh heading, the triangle highlights the word Bedin. Bedin means logic would have told you, and the logic that is presented here deals with meal offerings. We're going to deal with the Minchas Sote, not the Minchas Chote, the Mincha meal offering brought by someone who had sinned, and we'll deal with an animal offering, the standard sin offering. It's referred to by the term chatos chelev. Chelev is forbidden fats that are found in kosher variety animals. If one eats chelev, so if done so, b'shogeg, he brings a korban chatos, that becomes the standard for sin offerings, animal sin offerings. So that even though it's referred to as chatos chelev, understand it as a basic korban chatos. In both cases, logic would tell you that the added elements, for example, in a meal offering, the shemen and lavona should be present in a minchas chote. Why? And on the side we indicated shelo yehi chote niskar, so that the sinner shouldn't benefit by being able to save money on his required sacrifice. And with regard to the animal offering, the chatos that's offered, technically it should require the accompanying wine meal offering that you find by other sacrifices, and yet it doesn't. Why in these two cases do we say that the accompanying elements are not required? Well, we say that because of dismal nature of the circumstances of these korbanos being brought, namely they're brought in the context of sin. Therefore they don't have these beautifying or enhancing elements, but logic would have said that they should require them so that the sinner doesn't get off cheap. So now the Gemara inside. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Shimon, Bedin Hu. Logically, it should be Shetei Minchas Chote Tu'uno Shemen Ulevona, that the meal offering brought by the sinner should require oil and Levona Shaloyhei Chote Niskar, so that the sinner shouldn't come out benefiting by being able to bring a korban that ultimately costs less than others who would bring a meal offering. So then why is it that it doesn't require the shemen levona? Shelo yehei korbanu muhudar. So that his sacrifice does not appear in a beautified or a quality fashion. Muhudar, or hadar, is something that is exalted, something that's beautified, something that's rich, so that we don't want the mincha brought by a sinner to be exalted. So we therefore tell him, leave out the oil and the spice, which otherwise would enhance that sacrifice. Ubedinu, and logically, shetehei chatas chelev tunu nesochim, the korban chatas animal offering that a person brings, the sin offering, should require nesochim. Nesochim are the accompanying wine meal offerings that are brought, in Hebrew we refer to soles, and the yayin. Rashi says on the side, a few lines up, nesochim soles lemincha v'isaron lekeves. That means a wheat flour meal offering, and the isaron is a measure for a keves, for a sheep. One isaron for a sheep. Yayin v'shemen revi sahin kemo shemakriven le'olo u'shlamim. Wine and oil, a revi is sahin. A hin is a measure, a liquid measure, so you need a quarter of a hin, which is what you do bring when you bring an ola or shlomim type sacrifice. Yet, when it comes to the chatas chelev, it does not require nisachim. Why should we have thought that it should require shelo yehi chotei niskar, so that the sinner shouldn't be rewarded by being able to bring a less expensive offering? Umitneima einotunus, so why is it so that we forego it, that it doesn't require those, and he ends up, in fact, saving money? Shelo yehi karbona mehudar. We don't want a sinner's offering to be exalted, to be enriched. Avol chatos shel mitzora v'ashomo, the sin offering brought by a mitzora who was healed from his tzoras, and the osham brought by a mitzora, teunin nesachim, they do require nesachim, lefi she'ein boyin al chet. Their sacrifices are not brought because they had, it's not brought in the context of atonement for sin. Since they're not sin based, they do require the nesachim. Any, is this last comment really so? V'omar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeinu Rav Yonason al shiva dvarim negoyim boyin v'chulei, for seven different reasons, which include seven different types of sin. Negoyim is tzoras. Tzoras comes upon a person. So how can the source maintain that the chatas and osham of a mitzora are not sin-oriented, when the initial affliction, in fact, is sin-oriented? The Gemara answers, hasam, in the case of the mitzora, minigehu de'if balei. The affliction itself, the tzoras, which involves a whitening of the skin, and there's quite a bit more detail to it than we're saying. You can, of course, open up a Chumash and see in Parshas Tazria the descriptions. The Negoim that afflict the Mitzora, they are that which serves as atonement. Himaisi Korban, the fact that a Mitzora, when he's healed from Tzoras, brings sacrifices, that's not for atonement. That's Lishteriye Bekotshim Hudekomaisi. He brings the sacrifices upon the conclusion of his tzoras in order to permit him, to enable him, to resume eating from sacrificial meat, something prohibited him during the period of his tzoras. Elo me'ata, well, with all of this having been said, chatas nazir teituna nesachim lefishen oba al chet, a sin offering brought by the nazir. A nazir brings a korban chatas upon the conclusion of his nazirus. So it should require nesachim, and yet we say it does not. Why should it require nesachim? Because it's not being brought because of a sin. Person accepted nazirus, accepted a self-imposed restriction of wine and other grape products. Where's there any element of sin? And being that there's no sin, it's a chatos that the nozer brings, should require nesachim, and yet it doesn't. Sovar lo k'rabalozer akapor, diomar nozer nami chotehu. This point that the chatos nozer does not require nesachim, this is in consonance with the opinion of Rabbi Lozer HaKapor, that says that a nozer, in fact, is a type of sinner. In other words, the Almighty enabled him to partake of wine, granted people permission, and he comes and imposes a restriction on something that the Almighty allowed. That's called, in Hebrew we say, shetzir atzmunayam, he caused himself pain from the imposed wine restriction. That according to Rabbi Lozer HaKapor, is a wrong thing to do. Don't impose restrictions on yourself other than that which the Torah mandates, that the Torah restricts. For you to restrict yourself from consuming wine and grape products, something the Torah allows you to do, that's considered a sinful form of behavior. And therefore, we understand why someone would have the opinion that a chatas nazir is brought without nisachim. The Mishnah on Daf Yudal Amar Aleph said, Rav Gamliel Omer, Kishem Shemaisel Maise Behemo Kach Korbona Maichel Behemo. Regarding the Soto and the fact she brings a barley sacrifice, a barley meal offering, so he says that just like her behavior was the behavior of an animal, here you have a married woman going off with another man, so that's like an animal. So to the korban that she brings should be brought from material, from substance that animals eat. Animals eat barley, animals do not consume wheat, as far as the Gemara is concerned in general. Tanya, Omer Lohen, Rabban Gamliel, v'chachamim. Rabban Gamliel, who we just cited from the Mishnah Daf Yudalit, turns to his colleagues, the other sages, and he says, Sofrim, an expression referring to scholars, Hanichuli, leave me, Ve'adrushenu kimin chomer. And I will explain the Minchas Sota allegorically. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Shamei l'Rabbi Meir de Komar, Rabbi Leal had heard Rabbi Meir saying, He he'echilosu ma'adane oilom, she, the Sota, in order to entice the paramour into intimacy, well, she had to lead him into it. She fed him all kinds of delicacies, ma'adane oilom, fineries, delicacies, l'fikoch korbono ma'echol behemo. Therefore, measure for measure, so to speak, the sacrifice she has to bring is that of animal food. Omar lei ha teina chashira. This analysis would apply to the lewd woman who was of financial means. Then you can use this allegory that she fed him all kinds of dainties. That's something that a rich woman could afford, and therefore, he is to eat she is to bring the meal offering from an opposite extreme source. So, as we said, that drusha fits in well if the sota was a woman of means. We can then describe her as someone that was machil ma'adonim, anio ma'ikol me'ma. What about a sota that is poor? She wasn't feeding him ma'adani olam. Why then should her mincha be from Sorim? Elo, rather new approach. Kishem shema'asel ma'ise behemo, kach korbono ma'echo behemo. Just like her behavior, her going into private with another man. She's a married woman. What's she going into private, into seclusion with another man? Well, just like her ma'isim were like the ma'isim of an animal, so too, the sacrifice that she has to bring is Michael Behema. The Mishnah. On the side, under our Nosei topic heading, we've written Kli Cheres Shel Hasota, the clay vessel that is relevant to the Sota process, which will be filled with water, and she will drink from it. The Toisefes Ofer Lamayim, and the addition of dirt to that water. The Mishnah. Hoyamevi Fioli Shel Cheres. He would bring a cup made of cheres, of clay. And Rashi says, Kois Shel Mayim, it's a kos that is a cup of water. The Noisin Lusoicho Chatsi Lug Mayim Min HaKior. The amount of water that was put into this clay cup was one half lug. The water coming from the kior, the water tank that stood in the Beis Hamikdash courtyard. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Revius. Rabbi Yehuda said, not a half a lug, but a quarter of a lug, half the amount. Kishen Shememayit Biksav, just like Rabbi Yehuda reduces the amount that needs to be written in the Sota Parsha, the portion of the Torah that's written for this ritual, Kach Mimai B'mayim. So too, Reb Yudah reduces the amount of water. So we'll see later what the Mishnah is alluding to when it says that Reb Yudah reduces with regard to the amount that needs to be written. Nichnas Lehechal, Ufono Limino, the Kohen would enter the Hechal, the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash, turn to his right, Umokoim Hoya Shom Amo Al Amo, on the floor there was a place that measured 1 by 1 Amo, Vitavlo Shel Shayish, there was a tile made of marble, Vitabas Hoysa Kvuaba, there was a ring in this tile that you would grab the tile by a ring that was set into it and pick it up. Ukshu Magbia, Kishu Magbia, when he would pick it up, and no tail, Ofor Mitachteha. And from underneath this tile, he would take dirt. Venosain, and he would put, and you would ask, how much dirt does he need to take? The amount, Kadesh Yire Alamayim. Enough that it would be noticeable when put on the water. Shenemar, the pasuk says in this regarding this, Umin ha'ofar shiyeh bekarka mishkan yikach hakoyin v'nosan el hamayim. From the dirt that's on the floor of the mishkan, the kohen shall take and put it el hamayim. We look in the Rashi. V'nosan el hamayim midaloksi v'nosan v'mayim. From the fact the pasuk doesn't simply say he puts it in the water, el hamayim, rather it uses that expression, mashma shelo ye nivla besochan. It implies that it's not dirt that simply gets absorbed into the water and is no longer noticeable. The Rashi just before, kedesh yiro'eh, tzorch shitin litein shiur, he has to put enough quantity of dirt, she nira v'nikar al pnei hamayim, that it should be visible on the water surface. So now we turn to the Gemara, and you'll notice if you skim ahead in the Gemara, there's some markings that need to be explained. You see diamonds, and on the side of the Gemara, a nosei slash mivneh heading appears. The diamond indicates Mekoros, Rabbi Shmuel, the Kli Cheres Shel Soita Boy Lios Chadosh. Sources for that which Rabbi Shmuel teaches, that the clay vessel must be Chadosh, new, brand new, not a used vessel. The Gemara, Tana Fioli Shel Cheres Chadosha, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Notice we've dashed under the line Chadosha. We're going to be focusing on that in this discussion. A new clay cup, according to Rabbi Shmuel, is to be used. My taima de Rabbi Shmuel. What is the basis of ritual that insists on it being new? Approach number one. Gomar kli kli mimetzora. He has a word comparison, Gzeira Shava, from the topic of the mitzora. Ma lahalon cheres chadosha, just like in the mitzora purification process, a new clay vessel is needed. Af kan, so too by the sota cheres chadosha, a new clay vessel is needed. Once again, because the word kli appears in both topics, the hasam minalon, and there by the mitzora, how do you know that the vessel required must be new? Dichtiv, it says v'shochares atzipor achas el kli cheres al mayim chaim. In the sota, in the mitzora purification process, after the mitzora is healed from the tzoras, the skin discoloration that he experienced, the pasuk describes the procedure: a bird is slaughtered, one of two birds are slaughtered over a clay vessel that has in it water, mayim chayim. Mayim chayim is water drawn from a live spring. Ma mayim chayim shenase b'hen melacha, just like the term mayim chayim, water drawn from a live spring, is indicative of new water, water that hasn't been recycled. Af kli shelo nase bo melacha. So to the vessel that's going to contain the mayim chayim there by the mitzorah must be a vessel that was not used for any melacha, for any purpose. In other words, new. So we've established then that by the mitzorah, the vessel is like the water. And just like the water is unused, it's new water, so to the vessel there is new. And just like by the mitzorah, the word kli appears, so to by sota, the word kli appears, so by sota, we also require a new clay vessel. The Gemara asks, well, if we're already making this comparison, if just like by the mitzorah, the pasuk speaks about water drawn from a live spring, by the sota, are you going to say the same thing? Let's note the brackets we have here, and we're going to skip the brackets momentarily. Ika lemifrach, this attempt to derive sota from the mitzorah and say that you would have to have mayim chayim by the sota as well, that can be challenged. Mikfrach means we can undo this comparison. Namely, don't learn sota from mitzorah. Why? Ma lemitzorah shekeiton aitz erez ve'eza v'shni toloas. In the mitzorah process, there are additional requirements. We don't have to translate them. There are items that are needed in the sota purification process, the eitz erez, the ezov, and the shni toloas. And therefore, we could conclude that the requirements by the mitzorah extend beyond the requirements that we would expect to find by the sota. So that at this point, I'm not going to be able to derive the laws of sota from the laws of mitzorah. Mitzorah has additional stringencies and expectations, Eitzeres Ve'ez Shintolas, and therefore, I'm back to square one. How do you know by the sota you need to have a new vessel? Let's go back to the bracketed section. The Gemara had asked just before the brackets if we're going to be learning sota from mitzorah. Well, then, are you going to tell me, just like by the mitzorah, the water there must be from a live spring, so too by the sota? The Gemara says, the Rebbe Yishmael, and we're reading in the brackets, Rebbe Yishmael, hachinami. In fact, according to Rebbe Yishmael, we will say that. Diomar Rebbe Yochanan, me kior, Rebbe Yishmael omer, me ma'ayon hein. Rebbe Yochanan, it tells us that according to Rebbe Yishmael, the water that's in the kior, its origin was actually from a live spring. But Chachamim omrim mishar meimos hein. Chachamim say the water in the kior can be from other sources as well. So, at this point, since we're focusing on Shitas Rebbe Yishmael, with the suggestion that the sota water should be mayim chayim just like by the mitzorah, we are saying yes. In fact, according to Rabbi Shmuel, since the sota water is drawn from the kior, and the kior water must be from a live spring, sota water is also like the mitzorah, mayim chayim. Nevertheless, the Gemara comes back with its question, as we indicated earlier. How can you be so certain that the laws of Sota should be derived from the laws of Mitzora, Ika Lemifrach? You can still challenge this whole approach of learning Sota from Mitzora on the grounds that Mitzora has a higher standard, higher expectations. Ma'ale Mitzora, Shekein Ton Eitz Erez, V'Eza V'Shnita Loas. And therefore, since the Mitzora has these additional elements to it, I don't know necessarily that by the Sota, the Kli Cheres must be new. That might be a standard applicable to the Mitzora, but not necessarily to the Sota. Omar Rabba, Omar Kro, Bikli Cheres. The Pasuk that appears by the Sota says Bikli Cheres. And grammatically, the Gemara feels Kli Shamarti Loch Kvar. The type of clay vessel that is used for the Sota is that kind of Kli vessel that has been mentioned elsewhere. If we look at the Rashi, across from here, Rashi Omar Rabo, the Hule, Bekli Shamati Lochkvar, Hochi Mashma Le Rabo. The Pasuk that's relevant to Sota indicates that the Torah is referring to a Kli vessel that has been mentioned elsewhere. Midalogsi, from the fact that the Pasuk does not say V'lokach Kli Cheres V'nosan Bo Mayim, and he shall take a clay vessel and put into it water, Uksiv B'Kli Cheres, and rather it says the water is placed into a Kli Cheres, Mashma Shekvar Huskur Kli Zeh B'Mokom Acher, that this clay vessel by the Sota is a clay vessel that's been alluded to in another context. V'yomar Rachmona Hacha, and the Torah is saying over here by the Sota, Sheba also Kli She'amarti Loch B'Mokom Acher, in that same type of vessel that I spoke about elsewhere, Kach Oisam Umayniu, what's that other topic? Dimitzora. The Pasuk that, of course, we're referring to, you can see is quoted on the side of our Gemara, by Midbar Perakei Pasuk Yitzayin. A little further up on the page, the Pasuk says, V'loka hakein mayim kedoshim B'kli cheres min ha'ofer asher yeh b'karka mishkon yikach hakein v'nosan el hamayim. So in that Pasuk you see B'kli cheres. And as Rabo explained, grammatically that implies that the Torah, in the case of the Sota, is making reference to the Kli Cheres, the type of Kli Cheres, the state of a Kli Cheres that you find elsewhere, namely by Mitzora. And by Mitzora, we've already established that the Kli Cheres is like the Mayim Chayim, something that was not used before. Omar Rovo, Lo Shanu. Now here, Rovo comments on the opinion of the Chachomim. It's a tricky switch here, but according to the Rabbanan, who disagree with Rabbi Shmuel, that say a Kli Cheres Yoshan, an old Kli Cheres, a used Kli Cheres, is acceptable for the Sota, that is true, Elo, Lo Shanu Elo, Shelo Nisachmu Ponov. The word Nisachmu, Uchma, means darkened or blackened. It's true, provided it's, in other words, a used vessel is okay, provided it hasn't been blackened. Rashi adds, blackened al yedei ha'ur, through its exposure to fire. Aval nisachmu ponov, if the vessel is blackened, psulin, it's unfit. My taima, why is it unfit? Answer, dumya demayim, because the vessel, in the case of the Sota, is also compared to water. Ma mayim shel nishtanu, just like water is pure water. It's not something that's undergone change. Af kli shelo nishtana. So too, the vessel is acceptable provided it hasn't undergone change. Let's take a look at Rashi. Dumya demayim. Af agav delo gamri mimitzora. Even though we're not, the Rabbana do not learn from Mitzora. Mihu mino ubo gamri kli de soto mime soto. The Rabbana nevertheless do make a comparison, an internal comparison, internal within the realm of sota, between the vessel and the water. Unehi de me sota the Rabbana lav chayim ninu de mashib sharme. Most granted, according to the Rabbana, the water doesn't come from a live spring, as the Rabbanan accept waters for the sota from other sources. Mihas lo nishtanu. However, the water hasn't gone through change. Uklinami boino de lo nishtana. The vessel also must be one that didn't undergo change. It's we'll say its natural color as it was when it was originally manufactured. But if it's been blackened, it's not acceptable. The Gemara continues with a question. And this question is introduced on the side under our nosei. We started this topic already. Kli cheres shel sota shnia shachor posel afilu rabbanan. A kli cheres, a clay vessel for the sota that's been blackened, is unfit even according to the rabbanan. And here is the question number two that we've written on the side. Ma dino imechziroi likivshan lulabno. Imagine you have this blackened clay vessel, but you put it back into the kiln, the furnace, the kiln in which clay vessels are hardened, manufactured, and through exposure to the fire, the original color is restored. In other words, the blackened aspect is removed. Is it acceptable then? The Gemara. Boy Rova. Nisachmu. The vessel, the clay vessel, had turned black. It was put back into the kiln. Nislavnu, maybe you see the root of that word, lavan, lamed beis nun. And it became whitened. Mahu, is it acceptable? And now we analyze two sides of the question. Mi amrinon, do we say, kevon di idchu, idchu? That, well, once it's been pushed aside legally or halachically, namely, once it's turned black, and we said it's been rejected, the rejection is permanent, and you can't restore its acceptability. Oy dilma kevan dehader hader, or do we say that now that it's returned to an acceptable appearance, it returns, it's acceptable. Toshma, and now we try to respond. Reb Elazar Omer. Eitz Erez Ve'ezo V'shni Talas. These are elements that we alluded to before in the case of the Mitzorah. In the case of the Mitzorah purification process, Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shni Talas, Shehifshil Bohen Kuposel Achorav Psulin. The Eitz Erez is a piece of wood from an Erez tree. Ezov is a hyssop branch, and Shni Talas is a dyed thread. And if these were used, let's say you attach them to a box, you made a type of rope from them, and you slung a box over your back using these materials to be attached to the kupa, to the box, so they are rendered unfit. In that example, Hadri Umifshiti, you can unravel them from the connection to the box and restore them to their original state. And yet, the source says, Psulin, they're unfit. So the fact that something can be restored doesn't requalify it. Once it's been pushed aside, rendered unfit, it's unfit. The Gemara says, no, you can't conclude from that particular example of the Eitzeres, Ezev, and Shnit Talas that were made into some type of rope, because Hasam the Iklufi, the the bark or the peel, the skin that's part of these items, when used and attached to a box slung over your shoulder, it gets peeled, ikluf, peeled. And therefore, even though you unravel them from the attachment to the box, they do not get restored to their original state. Rashi adds a nice, let's say, detail that we didn't include in our explanation. Shehifshu kuposal achorov, regarding the Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shnei Tulas that were used as a rope, midalokotoni, it doesn't say in this source, shenase bohen molocha, that they were used for a particular role, that they were used for something. Shmamino amolocha lo kopid, ashinui kopid, vi elu nisakmu b'masui. The source is saying that the reason they're psulin isn't because they were used in the performance of some type of activity, some type of role, but rather because they underwent change. They became bent, out of shape. Rashi goes on, v'ha-hasam, the hadrim of shadiv katoni psulin. In that case, true that when they were attached to the box, so they might have been bent out of shape, but couldn't they be restored to their original state? And yet, they're rendered unfit. So we see from there that once something is pushed aside, it's pushed aside. The Gemara then answered, no, there, it's not something that can be restored. It's considered a shinui de lohadar, using the lashon you see in Rashi, it's a change that doesn't get restored to its original status. So that from that particular source, concerning the Eitz Erez, I don't have a conclusion to the clay vessel that was blackened, put back into the kiln and restored to its original unblackened, non-black color. Nichnas leheichal ufonu limino. The Mishnah spoke about the Kohen entering the heichal, the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash, and then turning right, making a right turn upon entering the heichal. My time, what's the basis of this right turn? The Omar Mor, we have learned, Kopinos shatapoine lo yu elo derech yamin. When you have to make a turn, unless otherwise specified, you are expected to make a right turn. This is derived from psukim that describe a water pool or tank that was in the Beis HaMikdash built by Shlomo HaMelech, that was supported on the back of 12 cow figures, and the directions that are quoted in the Pasuk regarding those 12 figures, three each on each one of the four sides, is the source for a right hand turn, right hand movement. So that's the basis of when you have to make a turn, and as I said, unless otherwise specified, you would make a right turn. This has a general, applicability, application, that is, to the Kohen when he's doing work on the top of the altar. He ascends the ramp and, generally speaking, would make a right turn when he reaches the required area of the Mezbeach on which he has to do his altar service. The Gemara continues, Mokom hoyosham amo v'chulei. And here the Gemara is introduced by a topic heading we have on the side, Ofer shel sota, the dirt used in the sota process that's added to the water, L'kichosa miritzpas hazara, the gathering, the taking of the dirt from the floor of the azara. We're going to see different opinions on this topic. Then we now turn to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, min ha'ofer asher yeh. Okay, here we have the pasuk from the sota in Bamidbar Perek Hey, pasuk Yudzayin. We quoted this pasuk earlier. Yochol yisake mibachutz viachnis. Would it be enough for the Kohen to take some dirt from outside the heichal and simply bring it into the heichal? And once you bring it into the heichal, that dirt is is useful for the sota process. Talmud Lomar, so the Torah answers that question and says, no, just by bringing it into the hecha, that's not enough to make it fit for the sota process, because the pasuk says, Bekaka Mishkan, dirt that's from the floor of the Mishkan, not simply dirt brought into the Mishkan. Well, Ibekaka Mishkan, if you're going to then focus or emphasize that element of the pasuk from the floor of the Mishkan, Yochol Yachbor Bekardumos, does that mean then you should bring shovels into the Mishkan and dig into the floor in order to access the dirt for the sota process? Talmud Lomar, Asher Yihyeh. Simply dirt that is there, not dirt that you have to dig out. Asher Yihyeh implies it's already present and accessible without digging for it. Ha-ketzat, so then how is it to be done? Yesh Sham Haveh. If there is dirt on the floor, we described before dirt that's under the tile, loose dirt that's under the tile of the Heichal, then bring it. Ein Sham Tein Sham. And if there is no dirt, accessible dirt, there on the floor, then bring some and put it there. Double star that you see here has relevance to a Rashi that appears on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. So when we make a reference to the Rashi there on Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, you realize that we're referring to this particular point in the source. There's the Rashi uses the expression Kedidarshinon Li'el, as was derived earlier. It's a reference to what we see over here. Let's continue then in the Gemara. Having seen this source, as far as the dirt is concerned, we're talking about dirt that has to come from the floor of the Mishkan, but not dirt that you would dig out with a shovel from the floor of the Mishkan. Tanyo Idoch, another source, and you'll see another opinion in this source. Umina Ofer Shir Yeh V'chulei Malame, this teaches us Shoy Mesakein Mibachutsu Machnis, that the dirt for the sota process is dirt that was brought from outside the Heichal and brought into the Heichal. Once you bring it into the Heichal, that dirt can then be used and added to the sota water. The Pasuk, and that you can see is a point of disagreement with regard to the source just before. You might notice we have little arrows to the immediate right-hand side of the left-hand side, that is, of the Gemara text. Here, in this second source, we say Melamed Shahoya Mesakim B'chutz Machnis. That's what you're supposed to do. In the source before, where you see the arrow above, there it said Yochol Yisakim B'chutz Machnis. Could it be? Meaning, not so. Well, according to the second source, the words Bekarka Mishkan, what does that teach us? Because as far as the origin of the dirt is concerned, there doesn't seem to be any connection with the dirt for the sota and the floor of the Mishkan. All that's necessary is that the dirt be brought into the Mishkan, into the Heichal, and that's enough. So what does the phrase Bekarka HaMishkan mean according to this opinion? Isi ben Yehuda Oimer, Lahavi, to include karko, and here there's a bit of a discussion concerning what are we coming to include. So Rashi at the end of this omid indicates that the girsa should not include that which we have in parentheses, and simply read base olamim. Again, lahavi karka base olamim, to include the floor of the permanent Beis HaMikdash, because up till now the Pasuk is talking about the Karka HaMishkan. So what does Bekarka HaMishkan, what's the role of this phrase? It's here to tell me not only the Mishkan, but the Beis HaMikdash also. The same applies, that dirt brought into the Beis HaMikdash that eventually is built in Jerusalem that is the dirt to be used for the sota process. In other words, dirt brought into the heichal of the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Alamim, the term Beis Alamim refers to the permanent Beis Hamikdash. That is the way we describe the Beis Hamikdash in Jerusalem. Isi ben Menachem Omer, so as to not confuse the names, the first name we have, in this source we have two appearances of rabbis named Isi. Have the first, say the same first name. Their fathers are different, so we indicate that with the dashed underlining. This is a different person. Isi ben Menachem, we have noted we're at the top of Daf Tez Zayin Omer Aleph. Isi ben Menachem Omer, Eino Tzorech. There is no need to use a posuk, namely Bekarka Mishkan, as the basis of including the Beis Olam and the Beis HaMikdash. Why not? I can conclude the Beis HaMikdash as being similar to the Mishkan through logic. Uma betuma kala lo chilek hakosuv. Mind you, with regard to light level defilement, that's a literal translation, but it's not so light level. Let's not make any mistake here. What this is referring to is someone who enters the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan in a state of Tumas HaGuf, body defilement. Entering the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan in a state of Tumas HaGuf, body defilement, results in a penalty known as Kores. Kores is a heavenly inflicted punishment that's a very serious. It involves dying young, dying prematurely, or a person's children dying. There are different explanations of what Kores is. And mind you, in the realm of Tumah Kala, and why is it called Tumah Kala when it carries with it such a severe penalty? The answer is because entering Beis HaMikdash to save defilement does not carry with it a court-appointed execution. There are many violations in the Torah that the court is not involved with in terms of punishment. Eating on Yom Kippur, doing malacha, doing forbidden work on Yom Kippur carries with it kores, but no court execution. They're viewed as lighter types of offense than those offenses that are punishable by misas based in court execution. So mind you, in the case of Tumah Kala, lo chilek hakosuv, the Torah makes no distinction between the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. The basis for that is from Psukim that Rashi quotes. So in the case of Tumah Kala, entering Beis HaMikdash in the state of Tumas HaGuf, they are treated the same. But Tumas Eishes Ish Chamura Lo Kol Shekein, then all the more so when it comes to the defilement that the Torah refers to when speaking about a married woman and forbidden relations, which does carry with it Misas Beis Din, all the more so we're not going to make any distinction between the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. So once the Torah tells you that when it comes to Sota, which is this realm of Tumas Eishes Ish, that the dirt is added to the water in the case of the Mishkan, the same thing will be expected in the case of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't need a pasuk to include the Beis HaMikdash to be similar to what we say concerning the Mishkan. Im kein ma tamalom bekarka Mishkan. So according to Isi ben Menachem, what does the phrase bekarka Mishkan mean? Shelo yovi mitoch kupaso. That the dirt that you use should not be dirt that was simply in a box. In other words, unlike Isi ben Yehuda, who said that all that you have to do is bring the dirt into the heichal, and that's enough. It doesn't have to be from the floor. Just take it from, bring it in while in a box, and use that dirt. Here, Isi ben Menachem says, no, that's not sufficient. So then what are you supposed to do according to Isi ben Menachem? You're supposed to do like we said earlier. And that we made reference to the stars back on Tess Bovo Midbeis, take a look at Rashi over here on the second narrow line. Im kei ma tamalome bakarka. What does Isi ben Menachem do with the term bakarka mishkan? Shelo yovi mitoch kuposo lesoch kli. That's a reference to putting the dirt in a vessel, viachnis lehechal, and enter the hechal with that box of dirt. Elo mekarka iso ito. Rather, the expectation is you're taking dirt from the floor. That's bekarka hamishkan. V'im ein sham, and if there is no dirt under that tile that we alluded to before, yavi v'yaniach sham, bring some dirt and put it there, and then pick it up from the floor and use it then for the sota process. V'achakach yitlenu v'niskayim asher yiyeh v'niskayim bekarka. So with this, we have a fulfillment of the expression in the pasuk of Asher Yeh, that's dirt that happens to be there, and Bekaka, but it's taken from the floor. Ke didarshinon li'el, as we explained earlier. And here you see the double star, and telling you to look back on Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis in the Gemara that we already learned. Before we conclude, let us point out that the Gemara will continue discussing issues of the dirt. The immediate topic that will follow, Mirtz Hashem will pick it up in our next shiur, has to do with the use of ash in lieu of dirt. Afer, a word spelled with an aleph, aleph pei resh, afer, can it be used in lieu of ofar, ofar, a word spelled with an ayin, ayin pei resh. Mirtz Hashem, we'll get to that in our next year. Before we conclude today, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.